We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Pacer Nation, what is going on? Welcome back to another episode of Setting the Pace, and I'm here live in my studio with David Cole, and this is a good friend of mine. We actually watched tonight's game together at the house, and it was just great to see the Pacers back on TV. Unfortunately, David's in the same boat as many of you guys, Hulu subscriber, not able to watch the games live, so because I have AT&T TV, David was able to come over and watch a game with me, and it all worked out. So, David, thanks so much for coming on, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I know I won't go into all the details, but the last 2 days of trying to figure out how to watch Pacers basketball have been a bit of an adventure, but it's good to see the team back on the court again.
Absolutely, and so I think the first place to start off is looking at this team. You can't start off any other place than with Domantas Sabonis. Guy plays 37 minutes, and that was something that everybody kept talking about all offseason, like, hey, is Bjorken going to play a deeper rotation? Is he going to limit some of Sabonis' minutes because of the plantar fasciitis that he got during the summer, kept him out of the bubble? No, 37 minutes. Actually, I think that's more than what he averaged last year per game. And he had 32 points, a career high, 13 rebounds, and 5 assists. This is the Domas we know, just with 14 more points than what he averaged last year for the season opener. So, Dave, what were your thoughts on Sabonis tonight?
Man, it was excellent to see Sabonis back on the court again. The whole offense looked better. Part of that is probably new coach, new system. Mm-hmm. Part of that is just what Sabonis brings to this team. Some people struggled. Some players struggled shooting, other issues, but just having him there to help create and just to take it to the paint. Man, he was strong tonight.
Yeah, I think what was funny is he got Nerlens Noel and Mitchell Robinson 5 fouls within like a matter of like 10 minutes of him being on the court. So I was like, man, like if Domas continues to put the pressure on the defense like this, this is going to be a problem. Now, I do think a little bit in the second half they did not give him that friendly of a whistle as they were giving him in the first half. But at the same time, this is a guy that Bjorken talked about this when he was signed or when he was given that contract with the Pacers to be the new coach. He was like, I like Domas. He puts pressure on the opposing defenses by getting to the rim. And when you think about it, there's not a lot of other Pacers that do it. Malcolm is a guy that isn't someone that's going to play above the rim. Victor was an above the rim guy. He's still trying to get back there. And we know that pretty much Sabonis is not really an above the rim guy either, but he's someone that attacks the basket. And that's one thing I love about him and Victor. And everybody was kind of worried about what Sabonis might look like in the new system. But I think this is just Domas showing you that it doesn't matter what system he's in. He's just one heck of a basketball player.
No, yeah, I don't think it matters. And I was right there with you. I thought, maybe Miles would be a little bit better in this system and maybe Domas would come back a little bit. But that was totally false tonight. And talking about the free throw issues, most Pacers fans have talked about how few free throws we shot last year. Domas shot 12. No one else shot more than 4.
Yeah.
So, that shows you how important he can be. and just creating mismatches, creating fouls, getting people into foul trouble, getting easy points from the line, that's really important. I mean, that's something that we've been trying to improve upon.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the percentages from the top three guys, Brogdon shot 50% tonight, Vic was 9 of 14, Sabonis was 11 of 18. Like, this is really efficient basketball.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are curious and anxious to see what TJ Warren's going to look like in this system. And unfortunately, you know, this is his first game back. They only played him 23 minutes. He was 2 of 8 from the field, 0 of 2 from 3. You know, defensively, I thought he was there for most of it on the on-ball stuff. He got, you know, like last year, similar to Warren, his off-ball defense. He gets a little – he watches the ball a lot.
Yeah.
And he gets beat on backdoors and stuff like that. So that's one thing he needs to work on. But I would just – you know, if you're worried about Warren right now, I would say pump the brakes, because these next couple of weeks are going to be like training camp and preseason for him to kind of get his feet wet.
Yeah, I think it's important to keep that in mind, that he's coming off of an injury that, for all we know, could still be a bit of an issue. We don't really know. It's, you know, with the plantar fasciitis, it's impossible to know, from our end at least, how 100% is he. Is he 80%? Is he 100%? Beyond the fact that he didn't get a preseason, and even the rest of the team got a very small preseason. So that's something to keep in mind, that we're not going to be in anywhere close to midseason form, given that it's the first game and shortened season and shortened preseason,
right,
and shortened off season. So just to see some of the players look great, I thought was super exciting. But Warren was for sure had a rough night.
Yeah, and like really, Sabonis didn't really, like, it shows he has 5 fouls, but if you were watching the game, he really didn't get a lot of fouls until towards the end of the game.
Yeah.
And I thought Quinn Buckner brought up a great point. He said Domas looks a little tired.
Yeah.
And you got to imagine playing 37 minutes and, you know, him not really having a serious game like an actual regular season game since March. It's been 9 months for Domas.
It's crazy.
So, yeah, it's good to see him back out there and hit the first three of the night, actually.
Yeah.
Went 2 of 4 from three tonight. So, going back to Domas hitting threes, that's good. I mean, if he's able to, you know, hit 50% from the three-point line, that's obviously great. I don't anticipate that every night. But
no, but
2 of 4 is something really good, David, and I think that's something we need to keep seeing from him launching those threes.
Yeah, I think just him getting 2 threes made is just big for his game. Like,
yeah,
being able to then pick and roll instead of, in, you know, after hitting the three, you have to then guard that, and so it just helps him create more. It helps him get more to the hole, which then creates free throw opportunities.
It just opens up so many different.
Yeah.
Avenues for Sabonis to be effective and impactful on the offensive end. Couldn't agree with you more there. And I want to talk now about a guy that everybody's been talking about all offseason, and that's Victor Oladipo, who's in a contract year.
Yeah.
But my oh my, 9 of 14, you know, he was pretty quiet in that first half, but that third quarter he came alive. And, you know, he had 4 rebounds, he had 4 assists, 1 steal, only 1 turnover,
yeah,
which was a huge thing to improve upon looking back at him playing in the bubble.
Yeah, especially the bubble.
Yeah, 22 points, 2 of 5 from 3. You know, that could maybe be a little bit better. But I just, you know, when I look at Oladipo, this is a guy that is going to raise the expectations for this Pacers team. Most people have them at that 7th seed, maybe 6th seed at max. I haven't really seen them in the top 5 most places.
Yeah.
I've actually probably seen more people predict the Pacers to be on the outside looking in around that 8, 9, 10 area, which is still a bit of, it's just mind-boggling to me. But Victor Oladipo, 9 of 14, really solid game, and I think we're slowly starting to see Victor get some of his former self back.
And that's the hope. And I think that even if you are the most jaded on Victor Oladipo, it's in the Pacers' best interest for him to be excellent. Whether he's already gone or not mentally, if he's, you know, if he's for sure going to leave the team next year, it's still in our best interest for him to be excellent, because then he's going to be worth more in the trade market.
Yeah.
And if he's not gonna leave, then obviously it's good for us for him to have a good game and for him to play better. I looked over at you about 6 minutes left in the game and asked you, trying to not be too hyperbolic, but like, is this his best game since the injury? And it felt like it was, especially from an efficiency point of view. Sure, he didn't score tons and tons of points like he has in the past, but 9 of 14, and even the 2-5 from 3, there were some games last season where he was just shooting 3 after 3 after 3 after 3, and none of them were going down. Or maybe he hit 1 or 2. But 2 out of 5, you know, that's a good spot for him to be in, especially given the fact that at times it looked like he was trying to force things, where he would have the ball, he'd bring the ball up or get the ball right away from Brogdon, and just have the ball the entire possession. And he never really looked like that to me, was more in the flow of the offense, which is what you want to see from him.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I was kind of curious, you know, because Warren, I think, still coming back, how the touches would be divvied up. Would that mean that Sabonis would take a step back? Would that mean Brogdon would take a step back? But really, I think if you look at it, they were pretty well divided up between the starters. I mean, yes, Sabonis at 18, but he also was very efficient, got to the free throw line. Of course, Warren was not as efficient. He was only 2 of 8, 0 of 2 from 3, like I mentioned. So just a bit of a struggle for him tonight, but like I said, I'm not taking too much stock in that. But
yeah,
it was the three guys. It was the three, you know, of Brogdon, Oladipo, and Sabonis that really helped this team on the offensive end. And you did ask me that question, and I said I really think, you know, the best game I saw from Oladipo before the or coming back from the injury was that game against Boston, the one we ended up losing before COVID hit. I mean, I thought Oladipo looked really good there, but then when the bubble came around, he struggled a little bit. But overall, I just think that you made a great point. Victor being his best self that he can be is exactly what this Pacer team needs. What this Pacer team needs, whether you want him on the team or not, like this is going to be a weird free agency because we have seen all these extensions happen with Rudy Gobert, even some of the young guys that got their rookie extensions from the 2017 draft. They're off the market for the most part. Like you got like Lonzo Ball, Lauri Markkanen, John Collins, Victor Oladipo. Like I'm trying to think if I'm missing anybody. I don't think there's too many other big names out there. Maybe Drew Holiday. He's got a player option. Blake Griffin, same type of thing. But I think when it comes to Victor, this is a guy that people are going to have cap space for now because they're planning on having Giannis cap space. And there could be like, hey, if Victor continues to be this efficient, they could throw money at him. So you asked me a question.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you asked me. You might have said, I think Victor is worth, what would you say?
I said, we were talking about basically what it would take for him to re-sign, given that we assume he wants a max or close to a max.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to figure out what kind of push does it take in terms of his numbers? Like, what his numbers have to be at for him to be worth the max for us? And that, and you said basically that he's probably never been worth the max, so he probably won't be worth the max.
Yeah.
Well, which is totally fair.
I just, when I see some of these guys getting max deals, like, and you brought that point up. Yes. There are some guys that are getting max deals that you're like, man,
not
like,
sure about that.
Are they really worth the max? I mean, that's a big deal. Like I said, really, for me, when I think of a max player, I think of top 10, top 15. And I don't think Oladipo's worth a max right now. And I think if you're trying to look at the long-term future of this team, you have to really put that into consideration. Like, if you want to give him a nice four-year deal for, you know, close to $100, $110 million, like, I can kind of see that contract structure.
Yeah.
But if you're talking $30, $32 million a year, like, I know what Gordon Hayward just got because there weren't a lot of free agents out there, so this could be the same thing for Victor from another team. I just don't know if I'm the Pacers. I want to do that.
Yeah.
But overall, I mean, we've got a whole entire year to see what Victor's going to be. This was the Knicks, a team that's not very good.
Yep.
So we won by 14 points. We pretty much dominated the second half.
Yes.
I would just say this. This is a good indication of what Victor could become this year.
Yeah.
But I think seeing him go up against tougher teams will be something I'm really going to keep my eye on and continue to see how he develops with Brogdon, Warren, Sabonis, and Turner throughout the season.
Yeah, I think for me, one of the things that I'm going to be watching is the performance of Vic versus the performance of TJ. They're not the same kind of players. They're really different in a lot of ways. However, given the salary cap issues that we have, even if we get rid of Turner through a trade of some kind, we're going to potentially be in a spot where we're going to have to choose between the two of them.
Yeah, that's one thing I think Rhett Bauer hit on in his article talking about TJ Warren's upcoming extension in 21-22 season, same with Aaron Holiday. I mean, it's something that you don't really want to think about right now because it's a couple years away, but in the back of your mind you have to think, well, if we sign Vic to this extension and then we do that with Warren, like, what is our next move? Because if this Pacers team doesn't, you know, elevate to a Eastern Conference contender or, you know, a team that can push somebody in the second round, then you're kind of paying a lot of guys to just, you know, plateau where you're at.
Yeah.
So I think those are all great concerns. But as far as tonight goes, though, this is a good sign for Oladipo.
Yeah.
I think him not being the prominent offensive option for the team is something that he's adjusting well to. I think that him and Sabonis. Like, here's what you got to think about. The Pacers traded away Paul George for Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis. Tonight they combined for 54 points, 9 assists, 17 rebounds, 2 steals, and a total of 15 free throws attempted. So,
yeah,
this is, you know, sure, you thought on that deal, Pacers just got robbed. I mean, we're making, everybody's making jokes about it. Pacer fans were like, are you serious?
Yeah.
Some people now will say, oh, I actually like the deal. Let's be honest. They probably were not thinking that when the deal was done. But if you put those two players together, I think that that's, you know, you got a better deal on that.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I hate to say that against Paul because Paul's a really good player.
Yes.
And I still think he's a top 15 player in this league.
Yeah, for sure.
But if you're able to substitute that with the production from those two, it's not going to be consistently like that every night. But the upside, the potential of Oladipo and Sabonis is greater to me than what Paul George is by himself.
And I think that's a temptation to try to get Vic to stay.
Yeah.
Is, you know, I think Sabonis is an all-star level player, even on his own. You know, obviously he barely made it last year. I think he'll probably barely make it again this year, or maybe just miss it, depending on injuries.
It's going to be tough.
Because of how many players didn't play last year, like Kyrie, like Durant. You know, a lot of players were hurt last year. So maybe he won't make it this year, but he'll still be as... His numbers will be the same, I think, or maybe even a little bit better, and he could still not make it.
Yeah.
That's fine. But it's a matter of, like, the two of them together, their chemistry has, from the jump, with the Pacers at least, has been so good.
Yeah. And I think with Sabonis, like, they're not going to have an all-star game, so it'll be interesting how they even pick all-stars.
Yeah,
maybe they'll just
true.
Give them the votes, and we'll kind of go from there. But anyway, I mean, I think overall, this was a really good game from the starters, you know, top to bottom. And one guy, or two guys we haven't really got into is Turner and Brogdon. So I want to get into Miles Turner here because...
Yeah.
He had the best plus-minus of anybody on the team with a plus 20.
Wow.
10 points, 8 blocks, and 8 rebounds. And, you know, a lot of people always talk about his elite rim protection. The fact that, you know, he's not going to get enough touches to get into that 15-point range, which is kind of true, I think. I think if he can get around 10 to 12 points a game, get those rebounds up to 8, I think 8 rebounds a game is good for Miles.
Yeah.
And obviously,
yeah.
8 blocks is not going to happen every game, but... That is a great start for the Pacers to say, look at what Miles did in this game, 8 blocks. And everybody was worried about that, too, the defensive end. Everybody kept saying, oh, we're changing our system.
Yeah.
You know, we're not funneling everybody to Miles. But Miles still seemed to find a way to have success and be impactful. And I know the defense has still got a lot of wrinkles to iron out with this team going forward. It's really early. I'm not getting overhyped or overdramatic about a first game against the New York Knicks, but just seeing Miles, you know, people were wondering if he was going to start tonight. You know, that was a thing because Bjorkman was like, I'm not telling my starting five. It was almost like he was in secret code, but it was the same five. He played 29 minutes. That's like a block every 3 minutes and 20 seconds. So,
yeah,
Miles Turner, super impactful tonight.
Yeah, and what I loved about it, and it was the same with him and McDermott, because someone sent me a text. It was like, how were, you know, McDermott and Turner 0 for 10 from the 3-point line? Which, that's not good, right?
No, no.
But I love, clearly. But I love that, for one, you know, if you're a Pacers fan, that's not going to happen very often. Both of them are better shooters than that, and they'll come back from that. However, what I love about both their performances tonight was that, yes, they didn't have a great night shooting from three, but they contributed in other ways. I mean, just having that plus minus of plus 20, I didn't even notice that. But even without that, even if you don't really, you know, love that stat, I know some people that don't love that stat, whatever. But 8 blocks, 8 rebounds, and really just you couldn't watch the game and not see that he was having an impact on the game.
Yeah, and I won't lie, I was a little bit nervous there when it was I think it was Nerlens Noel fell on the back part of his leg, and it looked like his knee hit the ground pretty hard, and it could have impacted his ankle as well. So I was a little bit worried about Miles there because we know that he did. Get a head injury getting hit in the preseason game in game one with Victor. So I'm just, you know, I think that while there are question marks of what this team looks like against better competition and all that fun stuff, I am excited to see how these guys are able to gel and use these opportunities, especially in December, early part of the season. I think we play our first 7 of our first 9 at home.
Yeah.
So this is a really good opportunity for these guys to get comfortable with one another. And it's a great start. It's a great reason to be happy. I mean, there's nothing really to be too upset about in this game.
3-point shooting being so low is that was probably the worst spot of the game.
Yeah, and 8 of 34.
It's pretty bad, honestly. But you can chalk that up to it's early. You know, a lot of people that usually shoot better did not shoot well. I mean, McDermott being 0 for 6, Justin being 1 for 5, and Aaron being 1 for 4. Yeah. Those are three of your better shooters, and they were all. Then they combined for what? 2 of 15?
Yeah, 2 of 15. Yeah, that's not good. That's not good at all.
But you know, shooting slumps happen, and you know, we've seen these same players shoot well before. So it'd be one thing if it was like, well, here we go again. Justin Holiday throwing up 5 shots and only making one. What else is new? But we know the guy can shoot. So he'll figure that out, and that'll bounce back eventually. And same with Miles and any of them that struggled tonight, really. Other than Sabonis and McConnell, there's nobody on the team that I'm like, oh, gosh, they're taking a three? Oh, no. Like, Sabonis hit 2 of 4. You know? So... And McConnell didn't take any. So those are probably the two worst 3-point shooters, and they combined for 2 of 4.
Yeah, and what's funny is, like, you bring up a great point about this bench, and I have to give a shout-out to Jeremiah Johnson, because he put this thing out on Twitter, and I felt personally attacked because of stuff I've been saying. He basically was like, all your preseason TJ McConnell takes look really bad now, basically, or something along those lines, because I was like, I don't know if McConnell should really be getting playing time with this rotation. He can't shoot the three. That kind of thing. I wasn't trying to overreact. I was more so thinking big picture with Bjorkman's offense. Yeah. Wanting to shoot, like, they shot 40, I think they averaged 43s a game in the preseason. Yeah. So I was thinking, if they're going to be shooting that many, and he's not a 3-point shooter, like, how many non-3-point shooters can you have on the floor at one time?
Yeah.
And we thought maybe he might go 10, 11 deep with his rotation, but he stayed with the 9 that McMillan played last year. And it's funny because McConnell, yeah, he only took 3 shots. He was 2 of 3 from the field. He had just 5 points, but he was plus 17.
Yeah.
The second highest plus minus, and I know, like you said, some people don't like that stat, but I think that it is very eye-opening for tonight's game in a way to show the impact, even though the numbers for McConnell's stat line, you know, 5 assists, 1 steal, 1 turnover, 5 points. Like, you think about it, you're like, yeah, 4 rebounds, yeah, and whatever. It was a McConnell game, you know.
Yeah.
Very, very low impact on the stats. Like, when you're looking at it with your eyes, you're reading the box, you're like, well, he didn't do much.
Yeah.
Then you see that plus 17, you're like, okay,
so what
this
did he
guy was making a difference. And like I said, like, yeah. I don't think he's a bad player in the system because of the pace that he plays with, because he's a guy that gets the ball down the court quick.
For sure.
He's got chemistry with those guys. I was just worried about 3-point shooting, so.
Yeah.
It's good, David, to see McConnell be able to play in this system and not feel like he has to be somebody he's not.
Yeah, he looked comfortable. I mean, yes, he didn't take any threes, but I think that's totally fine. I don't think that he has to be taking a bunch of threes for anything. I think that his game is going to flourish from the drive and dish. I mean, we saw some gorgeous passes from him down low. He would get to the paint and then just dump it off to Sabonis, dump it off to Miles, and just put it right in their lap. Like,
yeah.
Just have an easy layup or an easy dunk. And I think that's what he can do. And then I think that what you'll also see, and we saw some of this today, it just didn't fall as often as we would have liked, but him getting passes, when the defense collapses around him, he can kick it out to the open shooter.
Yeah. That's what McConnell is, though. And,
yeah.
I think there's just this perception of, oh, he's undersized, he wasn't good in the playoffs. I think people just had a bad taste in their mouth from the playoffs and part of the preseason. With him, now, I've kind of always said this, I feel like he's more of a regular season kind of guy than he is a playoff guy, and that's fine, but, you know, it's still like, you're still waiting for Aaron Holiday to prove that he can be that backup point guard.
Yeah.
And sometimes he does look better in that secondary role as, like, an off guard, and he played okay tonight. There was times when I thought, man, that was really impressive, but then there were some times when he had some really bad passes that didn't get through. Like, the idea was there, but he was just like a second too late on it. So there's reasons why coaches like McConnell over, you know, young potential like Aaron Holiday, even some guys like Keelan Martin, Edmund Sumner, those kind of guys, like, you're like, why aren't they getting a chance at the rotation? But that's just why. McConnell is steady and consistent, and I want to go back to the starters real quick to round up talking about them, and that's Malcolm Brogdon. I mean, this was a guy that was, I think he was 7 for 10 at the halftime, and he ended up going like 1 of 9, or the 1 of 6 the rest of the game. So it was not a great second half for Malcolm, but that first half was probably some of the best basketball I've seen Malcolm play as a Pacer.
He was great, and I don't want to take away from that the first half of the how the second half was a little bit more rough from the shooting aspect of the game, but I mean, you know, he's doing a little bit of everything. I mean, two steals, which led the team in steals, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, only had 2 fouls, only had 1 turnover. I mean, that was something else that we haven't said yet. Turnovers, like, at times were a problem for the Pacers. They were pretty good on that today. Sabonis had 4, and no one else had more than 2. So that's, like, I'll take that any day. But to stay on Brogdon, I mean, he did a little bit of everything, and ended up at 21 points. I think it was a really strong game. It just petered off a little bit. Like, I think that if you watch the first half, you would assume he had 30 points and just, like, torched the Knicks, and that just didn't quite happen. But what was really great was that when he cooled off, Vic took off.
Yeah, and that's kind of the same thing with Sabonis, too. Like, Vic just kind of took over in that third quarter, and those guys were just picking their spots. And I think Vic let them cook in the first half, and they let Vic cook in the second half. And when you have that many options, it's nice that you can kind of bounce it off one of another. And, like, you don't have to be, like, a guy that has to carry your team every single night when you have capable playmakers like those three players. And then you have T.J. Warren and Miles Turner sprinkled in there as well. Yeah. And those guys, at any given night, can give you 10 to 15 points. We know T.J. Warren was a leading scorer last year for the Pacers. So we know that he's going to get back in there. He's not going to just have 5 points. Like, you know, it's just, but with Brogdon, I mean, the guy had 8 assists. It was a quiet 8 assists. And the 2 steals were right at the beginning of the game. You saw him really set the tone, really trying to get in there and cause deflections and, you know, really trying to disrupt. That's what Nate Bjorken kept preaching, was disrupting on defense. So really good overall from him. And then in the bench, you know, wrapping this conversation up, David. Yeah, not a great game from Justin Holiday.
Yeah, it was rough.
It was kind of one of those things where he didn't play, like, bad, where you're like, oh my gosh, like, Justin Holiday looked terrible.
Yeah.
But you thought to yourself, like, this wasn't the most impressive game from him. You know, not a great shooting night for him. Did play 22 minutes. Was the only guy that had a negative plus minus. It was only minus one. So it pretty much shows the Pacers were pretty dominant the entire, you know, the entire second half, which kind of evened things out. But yeah, I mean, this is a guy that arguably is the Pacers' best bench player. Someone people think could even start sometimes this season. So if he is the best bench player until Jeremy Lamb gets back, I want to see him continue to play as productive as he did last year, but I don't know if that's going to happen either. So not saying I'm worried or anything like that, but I just think that I'm going to tamper my expectations a little bit with Justin because I want to see just if this new system, how this new system and how he fits in with the starters and everything, what his role is going to be like, because it was very McDermott Sabonis heavy with that second unit once again.
Yeah, and you know, it's just one game, but you know, we just paid him money. You know,
not much though. I mean, $18 million for 3 years, pretty good deal. I think he gave us a discount.
Yeah, sure. I think it was team friendly for sure. But you would expect this system to benefit him. He was one of our best shooters last year, and I guess what my concern is, both McDermott and Holiday struggled from three tonight, and they've struggled with during the entire playoffs and during much of the bubble. I mean, I think there was one or two games where Holiday shot pretty well from three, and McDermott was bad from three almost the entire.
He's been bad in the playoffs for the Pacers. There's no doubt.
Yeah, but in the bubble, he wasn't great for the
Yeah,
for the
he
Pacers.
Was. It's weird because, like, it's so funny. Like, when he plays on the road, like, road McDermott is, like, just the thing. Like, everybody talks
it's
about
so
it.
It's so bizarre.
But at home, he's 0 of 6. Like, there's not even fans in the stands. Like, this is a guy that, like, when he's on the road, like, you saw what he did in that Denver game last year. Like, I think it was, like, 9 of 10 from three or something stupid like that. I can't remember.
Yeah.
But he just went off. Like, that's the capability, like, you have a microwave type of shooter that in McDermott, and Justin Holiday shot like 40-some% last year, so I think those numbers will level out.
Yeah,
but I did bring this point up to you tonight, and this isn't me being like pessimistic or anything, but it's like, if Justin Holiday is your best bench player, like, that to me is not a problem, but it's definitely talks a little bit about just, you know, if he's your best bench player, does that mean that you're a championship level team? I don't think so.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they have so many good starters. I'm kind of debating myself for talking about it out loud. You can stagger the minutes like we've seen and allow those other guys to kind of play in that six-man role with the bench guys. Just divvy up those minutes from the starters with some of the guys in the second unit.
Yeah, we just don't see NBA teams like the way that the Pacers team is built this year and last year too. I mean, you see teams that have, you know, one or two players in the top 15, top 20, and then, you know, just a lot of depth, or, you know, like teams like the Lakers, they, you know, have AD and LeBron, and they have a lot of really good, like, players to fill in the gaps, right? And they have like if you stacked up the five best players from the Pacers and the five best players from the Lakers would have 1 and 2, and they would have like a big chunk in the middle where the Pacers would have 3, 4, 5, and then like 8, 9, 10. You know, it would be like it'd be weird. So I think that it's just a different scenario where we don't have anybody in the top 15, but we have, you know, 4 or 5 people in the top 50 or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's just like this weird dichotomy of like you don't have a star or even 2 star-ish level players, but you have 5 guys that can any night have 25 to 30 points.
Yeah, and I think one thing too, like this is just like another me thinking about Justin Holiday. It's like
yeah,
he's not a guy that really can create for himself. Same with McDermott. He's not a guy that can create for himself. He's very solid playing with McConnell and Sabonis. And I think we talked about this all year long during the playoffs. It felt like a year. It wasn't a year, but that entire bubble, it was just like you realized how important Sabonis was to this team. Like, Warren started going off in the bubble. Everyone's like, oh, maybe the Pacers, you know, are better off with Warren as their number one option and Sabonis as more of a complimentary role to him. I never bought into that because I think Sabonis just does so many things with his passing ability, 5 assists tonight, his rebounding ability, 13 rebounds tonight, his scoring ability, 32 points tonight, and his screen setting. I mean, there were so many times that he created open looks for Vic and Malcolm just by giving them that extra space on those screens. And I talk about this probably every podcast. I'm going to try to do better about it this year. But just the way that Sabonis sets screens and gets guys open on offense, it's just phenomenal. And that's why Justin Holiday and McDermott, those kind of guys had great years. And this is why people are excited about Aaron Holiday. He only played 17 minutes tonight. 3 of 8 from the field, 1 of 4 from three. He's a guy that's been very streaky in his Pacers career.
Yeah.
We want more consistency from Aaron Holiday, and I think that maybe giving him more minutes to kind of expand that role will be beneficial. But at the same time, I get it. Bjorkman's trying to establish something here with these guys, and I know he wants to get out there and really get some victories for this team, because whether it's a new year or not, new coach or not, the goal is to advance in the playoffs, which we haven't done in a while.
Yeah. And, you know, like, I would love to see Aaron Holiday, because you have to distinguish between the two of them.
Yes, you do.
I would love to see him get a few more minutes, and that was the problem with, you know, McMillan. And he only had 17. And I feel like for him, maybe 20, 21 is where you'd want him to be, depending on how well he's playing. I know in the bubble he had some foul trouble issues tonight. He only had 3 fouls. He didn't shoot super well. And like you said earlier about Aaron Holiday, he did have some passes. He had 1 skip pass that was supposed to go to Justin, and it was just like right to a defender. Like,
yeah.
It was like he didn't even see him.
Yeah.
And he does still make some mistakes that you would expect him to not make at this point in his career, but it's hard to gauge because he hasn't played that much. Yes, he's been in the league for a few years now, but like he's always been either did not play or you get 5 minutes in spare. And last year he played much more, obviously, especially in the bubble.
Well,
but his first year he didn't really play at all.
A lot of it too, David, is he's not been playing in that starting, or not starting, but that point guard role.
Yeah.
He's been the off guard role, played with Malcolm, played with McConnell. So
yes,
he's not been, oh, hey, let's run the offense through Aaron. It's like Aaron's going to be on the wing and we'll set him up for some shots. Like, I think there was one drive, I think it was in the first half, he had a great drive to the basket. You were like, oh, that was a strong take.
Yeah.
And like, that's the Aaron I think we want to see, because he can be explosive at times. I don't think he's going to dunk on people, stuff like that.
No, but he's strong.
Able to get to the rim, you know, and that's one thing he did. He did, I think he had a really bad conversion percentage last year, of getting into the basket but not finishing shots.
Yeah.
That's tough when you're a smaller guard like Aaron, but I think that you like the aggressiveness from him. And if he's able to put that kind of pressure on the defense, if he can work on that facilitating, then you could get his brother and Doug and the shooters on the team more shots if he's able to be a little bit a better facilitator. But overall, I mean, Aaron Holiday is someone that this team, I think, really values.
Yeah.
And, of course, we did not get a chance to see Goga tonight. I don't know. I don't think he got to see it, but Bjorkman did talk about that pregame. And he basically was like, Goga really wants to be out there. He's a really good young player for us, and you know, he deserves minutes. And I thought that was kind of interesting that he basically threw it out there that, hey, I want to give this young guy some minutes to play with us. And overall, you know, it's just going to be hard because while there's not a great bench player, there's a lot of really good bench players, a lot of good role players that fit this team. And then once Jeremy Lamb comes back, that means that someone's going to have to take a step back. And it could be McConnell, it could be Aaron, it could be McDermott, it could be Justin, who knows? I don't know. I mean,
that's tough.
It's,
I mean,
I would assume McConnell still, but it could cut into Aaron's minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Sabonis probably will average closer to 34.
I'd rather be 32. That'd be my hope.
Yeah, either way, he won't average 37.
Yeah.
So there's 3 or 4 or 5 minutes that could go to Goga. And then... Yeah, I mean, McDermott with 28 is probably high. I mean, he has the same amount.
That is a little high for Goga.
As Vic. Same amount as Vic, one less than Miles and 5 more than TJ. But TJ had a rough game, so I understand that part of it. But he won't have 28 a game. So there's probably 10 to 15 minutes some nights, given certain matchups. And I think McConnell, I think, is one of the most matchup-dependent players we have.
That's true.
I think there's some matchups where he will just really struggle, and some matchups where he will just torch people.
Yeah, because Miami was a terrible matchup for
him. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so I think that when you're seeing a team like that, then maybe you give him 10 minutes. You know, you give him much less, or you know, maybe you don't even play him in all some games. I don't know. Yeah. I don't know how that will sit with him. He seems like he's a really great team player.
Yeah.
But I mean, NBA players, you know, are NBA players, and most of them have egos. So
I think McConnell would be under. What I will say with Bjorkgren, he seems very transparent with this team.
Yeah.
Telling Edmund Sumner ahead of time in that final game of the preseason, hey, you're not going to play tonight. I'm going to let these younger guys that are on our G League team that we're kind of looking at get some opportunities in the fourth quarter. So you're not going to play tonight.
Yeah.
And I think if he goes to McConnell, hey, these are some matchups we want to see. Aaron get the backup point guard role. Give maybe Goga some more minutes. Lamb's coming back. We're not going to be able to put you in the rotation tonight. I think if you're able to be transparent and be upfront, and let him know, hey, look, it's not going to be fun to tell a guy he's not playing in a certain game or for a certain set of games. But as professional as TJ McConnell is, I think he's going to be somebody that really can embrace that. Where I think if you told a young guy like Aaron, hey, we're going to take you out of the rotation for the next couple of games because we're going to give Edmund a chance, Keelan Martin a chance, and Lamb's coming back, I think that that might impact mentally Aaron Holiday more than it might impact a professional like McConnell, who was around the 76ers when they went through the whole trust the process thing. So I know for a fact that McConnell is on a different maturity level than most of the guys on this roster.
Yeah, probably.
He wants these guys behind him that are kind of not coming for his minutes, but guys that he knows really want some of his minutes.
Yeah.
He doesn't look at them as a problem, as someone stepping on their toes like you might feel like in a workplace, something like that.
Yeah.
He just looks on them. Hey, let's go together. Let's go to work. And that's why I love TJ McConnell.
Yeah, he's definitely a pro's pro. And you can tell, we saw it in the bubble when Aaron would have a mistake or something would happen with Aaron. He'd go pull him aside and talk to him. He definitely wants to be a mentor. And he's not someone that I don't think would get jealous about that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Especially given how Bjorkgren seems to be very open, as you said.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I think the transparency and the personal relationship that Bjorkgren has with these players will definitely help this team when they do get into a bit of a rotational, I don't know what the correct term is here, but
just getting used to like the routine of all of that.
Yeah, like, well, getting a set rotation, but there's going to be nights when he doesn't have a set rotation, and it's like you feel like, oh, I'm coming in playing this many minutes, and then you come in the next week and realize you're not in the rotation because, you know, Lamb's back healthy or Sumner is, really improving in practice and showing that he deserves minutes. I mean, it's a tough spot to be in if you're a coach. So, anyway, that's a long rabbit hole on TJ McConnell and that whole thing. But the Pacers win tonight, 121-107. Pacer fans around the world are excited tonight. Our friends in Australia, the Pacers, I'm sure they're excited. Oh, yeah. We do have some of the Philippines. I know that. They're excited as well. And I'm not sure if they were able to watch the game or they're going to get up and watch it in the morning. But this is just awesome, man. I'm so excited that the Pacers basketball is back. And not a better way to do it than beating those dumb, stupid Knicks. I'm still mad about the Larry Johnson 4-point play.
Oh, yeah.
And it makes me feel good to know that the last time the Knicks were in the playoffs, Roy Hibbert blocked Carmelo Anthony with one of the most beautiful pictures of all time.
Yeah, that's just the best. You know, anytime you're going to beat a rival, it's going to be good. You know, we don't want to get too overhyped about beating this 2020 Knicks team. But, hey, you know, it's good to see the Pacers back. It's exciting, and it's good to start off the season with a win.
Yeah, I will say this. I'm confident that the Pacers and the Pacers fans will have a more fun and exciting season than the Houston Rockets will.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, starting off on a Rockies foot, and who knows how much Harden wants to be there anymore.
He don't want to be there. We know that.
that's a mess.
We got Kendrick Perkins doppelganger James Harden coming straight out of the the strip clubs onto the court for preseason action. And then everybody apparently got their hair cut today. They got so many guys were involved in contract tracing with COVID-19.
Yeah, man.
I mean, these guys, I don't know what's going on. Houston, we have a problem. I really believe that. So, Indiana fans, thank God you don't have to worry about that. I know we did talk a little bit in the last couple pods about hypothetical Harden to the Pacers rumors, but trust me, that ain't going to happen. You can just embrace this team for what it is. I mean, even some people thought there might be some midseason trades. Like, I still don't know if I think the Pacers make any moves. Still the offseason when their hand's kind of forced, but this is a great win. Go enjoy it. Christmas is here. We don't play until after the Christmas holiday. So, Merry Christmas Eve. Merry Christmas to you guys. Stay safe. Stay healthy. And what do we say, David, at the end of our podcast?
Let's go Pacers.
Let's go Pacers.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.